Welcome to Alabama Short Stories, when you're a little behind on your Alabama history. I'm your host, Sean Wright. I spent a lot of time in class in Biggin Hall on the campus of Auburn University earning my BFA. Biggin Hall, the closest school building to Toomer's Corner, stands out among the other Auburn buildings. Originally home to the College of Architecture, Design, and Construction, it's now home to the Department of Art and Art History. It is named after Frederick Child Biggin, the first Dean of Architecture. One of the few mid-century modern buildings on campus, it features a wall of windows along West Magnolia Avenue that let in natural light, perfect for the artists at work on their projects. At night, it is a window into the life of an art major for the rest of the students to view while they enjoy the nightlife around Toomer's Corner. You will get no complaints from me. Working on an art project on a Friday night beats going to math class during the week. Now, when I was there, the basement had a large auditorium where mid-afternoon art history classes tested your ability to stay awake in the cool, dark auditorium after lunch. The clay, stone, and wood sculpting classes were along the outside walls that let in the sun. At the end of the hall, just past stone sculpting, was a large vault, a walk-in vault like you would see in a bank. It was rumored that there were famous paintings hidden away in that vault. I later learned that these paintings were part of the State Department collection. At least that's what I was told it was called. It's better known as Advancing American Art. Now, how this collection of paintings came together and how many of them came to be owned by Auburn University are part of Cold War intrigue and sheer luck. Now, before I tell you about the Auburn connection, let's start with a little history and the show. At the end of World War II, the U.S. and Soviet Union were on the same side. But as soon as hostilities ended, the Allies divvied up the conquered land. British Prime Minister Winston Churchill sent President Truman a telegram that said, "An iron curtain is drawn down upon their front. We do not know what is going on behind." For the next 40-plus years, a Cold War would be held amongst former allies for the hearts and minds of their people. This war would be waged by the intelligence communities in the shadows using spooks and spies and right out in the open, though no one realized it then. When Stalin came to power in the Soviet Union, art and architecture were tightly controlled. Social realism was the official style of art, and to deviate from it meant taking your life into your own hands. Think of social realism as paintings showing Stalin looking heroically in the distance. You could even say that social realism was a reaction against the modern art movement in Western countries. When Stalin died in 1953, restrictions on art were lessened. Still, when successor Leonid Khrushchev saw one artist's work, he flew into a rage, saying, "It's dog shit! A donkey could smear better than this with his tail!" But things had changed. The artist did not lose his life, and the exhibit director would go on to design Khrushchev's tombstone in a modern style. In this atmosphere in 1946, the U.S. State Department put together an exhibit of works by American artists titled Advancing American Art. $50,000 of taxpayer money was spent on 117 modern art paintings. This exhibit would show the rest of the world that in the post-war United States, American artists and immigrant artists who had moved to America had the creative freedom to introduce new art styles and paint what they wanted, unlike those in closed countries like the Soviet Union. It would show the world that the United States creates art, not just manufactures tanks, planes, and automobiles. Advancing American Art was planned for a 5-year overseas tour in 3 separate shows. One show went to Eastern Europe, with stops in Paris, France, Prague, and Brno in the Czech Republic, in Bratislava, in Slovakia. It was intended to continue to Budapest and a location in Poland. The second show went to Havana, Cuba, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and was to be sent to South America. A third show was to be sent to China and the Far East, but had never left New York. The choice of sending modern art was a risk. Modern art today is much more accepted art form than in the 1940s. Many people disliked or despised it through the 1950s and into the 1960s. It was a shock to those who grew up with a picture of dogs playing poker hung in their homes. Fans of Norman Rockwell's idealized portrayal of American life and Frederick Remington's Heroes of the West were probably taken aback by the artist trying to push the art form with the isms of modern art. Needless to say, not everyone was on board with the purchase and display of modern art paintings. Representative Fred Busby of Illinois said, "This is exactly what the communists and other extremists want to portray, that the American people are despondent, broken down, or of hideous shape, thoroughly dissatisfied with their lot and eager for a change in government. Somehow, Busby thought that the artwork was a reflection of the job he was doing. But he wasn't alone in his negative views of the exhibit. One congressman wrote a letter to Secretary of State George C. Marshall. "The paintings are a travesty upon art," he complained. "They were evidently gotten up by people whose object was apparently to, one, make the United States appear ridiculous in the eyes of foreign countries, and two, establish ill will towards the United States." President Truman described the collection as the vaporings of half-baked lazy people. The popular Look magazine published an article titled, "Your Money Bought These Paintings?" Two paintings featured were Ben Shahn's Hunger and Yasuo Kuniyoshi's Circus Girl Resting. Hunger is a painting with a viewpoint looking down on a boy with dark eyes and a red shirt. His hand is outstretched in hopes of some food. Some thought this was a critique of America's hand in the war and starving children in Europe. But the image was based on a boy in the West Virginia coal country. It didn't help that Ben Shahn, a Jewish immigrant from Lithuania, had left-wing political views. Yasuo Kuniyoshi's Circus Girl Resting featured a woman in a chair with stocking legs crossed. She wore a thin strap top with one strap falling down her arm, almost exposing her breast. This painting so offended President Harry Truman that he exclaimed, "If that's art, I'm a Hottentot." The conservative Hearst newspaper chain took up the fight and made it their cause celebre. Inquiries were made into the political activities of the artist whose paintings were part of the show. It was found that 18 of the 47 artists were on the list of the House Un-American Activities Committee, the infamous committee headed by Senator Joseph McCarthy. Three of the artists had been members of the Communist Party, and it didn't help that many of the artists had foreign names. Secretary of State Marshall recalled the show and put the collection up for auction as a war surplus. This listing caught an eye of a few universities who realized that they could bid on the art at a 95% discount. War surplus was big business after World War II. Soldiers were coming home and many were taking advantage of the GI Bill and were enrolling in school. Military surplus was an excellent way for schools to get the supplies they needed to handle the increased enrollment at discount prices. In one ingenious repurposing of equipment, Auburn turned tugboat cabins into small apartments. Auburn's Veterans Affairs Office was tasked with housing the 8,000 new students. War surplus agent Dorsey Barron was reading through the bid forms, looking for the next tugboat cabin, when he found an unusual posting. It was for 117 oil and watercolor originals by leading American artists. He didn't know about art, but he knew a bargain when he saw it, and he called the School of Art and Architecture. Art professor Frank Appleby picked up. Only larger universities had significant art collections, and Appleby knew that paintings from this collection would be a great start for Auburn. He lobbied school president Ralph Brown Drawton, who in turn lobbied Alabama congressional leaders and Senator John Sparkman. Remarkably, none of the Alabama politicians were worked up about the art like their colleagues. Sparkman was eager to help Auburn obtain the art. Auburn submitted individual bids for all 117 paintings. They won 36 paintings and paid only $1,072. In today's dollars, that's a little more than $13,000. It's not a bad bit of business when you can purchase a Georgia O'Keeffe for $50. The University of Oklahoma bid the same way and obtained 36 paintings, and the University of Georgia acquired 10. The rest went to small museums and high schools. An initial exhibit was held in Auburn, and in 1949, an exhibition was held at the Birmingham Public Library by the Birmingham Art Club to mixed reviews by viewers. Birmingham News staff writer Walling Keith wrote an article about the attendees' opinions of the show, titled, "Please, Ma'am, Lay That Easel Down, I'm Neutral." Some viewers disagreed with the congressman who called the paintings red propaganda. They felt it should be much worse. Others leapt to its defense, one calling the paintings exciting and stimulating. The paintings went back to Auburn and would be displayed in campus buildings until it was decided to put them away due to wear and tear and the paintings' increasing value. Maybe they went into that vault in the basement of Biggin Hall. Wherever they were gone from campus before I got there. The Montgomery Museum of Fine Arts received a conservation grant, and the paintings moved there in 1979. The museum organized a tour in 1984, and that was when my art class viewed the paintings for the first time. Now let's catch up on our story so far. The U.S. is on the winning side of World War II. They want to show they are leaders in art and democracy. The U.S. State Department puts on a show of modern art to tour the world. The show receives a great deal of backlash from politicians and conservative media. The art's auctioned, and Auburn makes out like a bandit. And we can thank the CIA for our windfall. For years, there was suspicion that Advancing American Art was a CIA-backed program, and by the 1990s, it was confirmed. The show was part of a long-term propaganda campaign to assert American dominance in the Cold War. The show was one of the first events paid for by the CIA and fronted by the State Department. American culture would be showcased abroad for the next two or three decades, funded by the CIA. The CIA's involvement was kept a secret for obvious reasons. They're a secret organization, after all. But to publicly fund tours of artwork and American culture abroad would never have been possible through Congress. The backlash against the show Advancing American Art was proof of that. With the purchase of the paintings, it was understood that a museum on campus would house the collection. Biggin Gallery was inappropriate, and Langdon Annex was considered for a time. The short-term storage in Montgomery turned into a long-term storage as Auburn looked for a solution. It would take 55 years for the artwork to find a permanent home. In 1992, Auburn's art collection, without a home, grew as the philanthropist Susan Phillips donated an extensive collection of John James Audubon prints known as the Louise Haas and David Brent Miller Audubon Collection. It is thought to be the largest Audubon collection in the nation. A year later, she and her brother Alan Phillips donated $1 million to construct galleries that would continually display selections from the collection. In 1998, Albert Smith, class of 1947, donated $3 million to the museum project as a gift to his wife in honor of their 50th wedding anniversary, and the museum was to be named in her honor. In 2003, the Jewel Collins Smith Museum of Fine Arts opened its doors. It all started because a war surplus agent at Auburn saw a good deal and alerted an art professor. President Drawton shared the vision of the university owning a world-class art collection, and he got the ball rolling. It took another 55 years for the Advancing American Art Collection to be housed in a permanent home on the Auburn campus. The collection has continued to grow and contains work by Marc Chagall, Salvador Dali, Henri Matisse, Joan Miró, Pablo Picasso, and Pierre-Auguste Renoir. And finally, we can answer President Truman's question. Is that art? Yes, it is. And you are a Hottentot. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Alabama Short Stories Podcast. I'm happy to announce that Volume 2 of the Alabama Short Stories book is now available and features stories from Seasons 4 through 6. You can purchase it and Volume 1 online at Amazon.com and other online retailers. If you'd like to support your local bookstore, you can purchase it through bookshop.org, where your purchases will help financially support independent bookstores. You can find links in the show notes and on the website. See you next time at Alabama Short Stories.